Okay. Welcome to this episode of It's a Cliffhanger by George, your only podcast for detailed breakdowns of the George Lopez Show, episode by episode. I'm one of your hosts, Kyle, joined by my Lopez lover, Tim. How you doing?
I'm doing quite well. Spent most of my day at the park reading comics, and can't wait to finally talk about some George Lopez now.
I know, it's a rare weekend record for us. Normally you're coming in the door, jonesing to eat. But so I'm glad you had a good day, because I do have some bad news, buddy.
We're not going to have time to talk about George Lopez?
No, we're not going to be able to talk about the episode of George Lopez where everything hangs in the balance for the entire Lopez family. Ernie tells George that the factory is moving to Mexico and they both might lose their jobs. We actually have a really good episode. We're going to be talking about a new book that, if you're listening to it, is not out yet, but I'm really fucking excited. It's in previews. Darling, number one. And we're joined by one of the creators, Michael Fleazak, to talk about it. How are you doing, sir?
It's Flyzak.
Fuck, I knew it. God damn it. I was like, the second I was saying it, I was like, I know. I already forgot. God damn. I'm going to leave in the whole thing we talked about beforehand.
It happens all the time.
And, you know, I wrote it phonetically, and then I was like, I'll just fucking wing it. God
damn it. I've been on the other end. It's totally... totally fine.
You know what it is? It's because I stress about this stupid George Lopez thing we've wrangled ourselves into doing every episode. Someone's like,
for what it's worth, I really enjoy it. The George Lopez joke. I don't know. My opinion is worth, you know, about a nickel. But it's I thought it was pretty funny.
Well, that, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, like every time I'm talking to him, I'm like, God damn it, there's hosts, and I don't know sometimes if there's people who I'm like, they don't want to sit through this, but oh well. Yes, but more exciting news, we're talking about Darling number one, which I think when this comes out, this episode, I can't do math, future math, but about a month or so you'll still have time to pre-order, but me and Tim, lucky enough to get an early read on it. I saw it in previews, and then kind of when this opportunity came about to talk to you, I was like, yes, because like this thing looks amazing. The idea behind it, I was on board for. The art is fantastic. I love Dave Mim's art, and the kind of the direction you guys have taken with his art and style for this is particularly interesting. Mm-hmm. For anyone who's not familiar with it, I always hate to ask this question, but maybe less what's it about, but kind of how this project come about broader. Like I know the idea behind it when your brother's journals, and we can get to that, but kind of like how did that morph into what we get in this like first issue of Darling?
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of like, geez, this would be much easier if my co-creator and writer Todd were here, who's gonna listen to this and be upset that he didn't get to answer probably all these questions that he would love to answer. Todd and I, he's not here. I'll just keep referring to him. Todd and I, we kind of make mulligan stew. We kind of take everything that we love, like in pop culture and comics and movies and just everything. And we throw it in any cool idea. And we know that we have to get the other one excited about it for it to kind of work. The idea came about, it was really just kind of me working through grief after my brother passed away from drug addiction. And he left me all, like a bunch of his journals and a bunch of other things. And I started to go through them to kind of process all the stuff and just kind of figure it out, because you feel really strange. And I encourage people to talk about it. If you've lost someone or know someone who's struggling, like there's a weird stigma around it. Like you feel kind of like you shouldn't be socializing or talking about it with other people. But like it's a thing that's affecting. I promise you, you know someone or know someone who knows someone who's struggling with it. And so the book came about with we had a bunch of weird ideas hang around of things we loved, and then I wanted to kind of create this world where I got to hang out with my brother again. Because when you lose someone, especially young and tragically, you lose so much with them, right? All your inside jokes, all your, you know, references, you know, memories and things like that. And he was my only sibling. So kind of like all that went with him. So I kind of wanted to build somewhere to keep all the stuff that I loved about him. And I guess that became Darling. It's a combination between Todd and I throwing everything we love into a soup, and then my brother's journals and everything I loved about him. And it gets pretty strange. I'll be the first to admit the book. It gets stranger and stranger, or to you know, crib Alice in Wonderland or Lewis Carroll, like, curiouser and curiouser. It gets really weird. We think in a really fun, good way that'll keep you guessing. That's a really long, rambling answer to a very, very simple, straightforward question, and I apologize for
no,
that.
No, I think, like, again, because I think the idea around it is very kind of large and encompassing. Not only, the first issue itself, you guys do a lot of work within this first issue. You do, like, a lot of great character work and character building, and at the same time, you get that, like, you get the slow descent to almost surreal. You guys never really tip it that way, but you get the feeling, like you said, kind of, like, it gets stranger and stranger, and then it kind of caps at the end, and, like, it makes you really excited for issue two and kind of the world you're building. But again, kind of the idea, you start the issue off kind of addressing your brother's journals and your kind of exploration into them. For that, how did he make his influence on the comic? Was it kind of some of his stories or his thought process using and kind of battling that? Was that something that made its way into the characters, or was it kind of, again, kind of the things you liked, and was that really kind of the reference for it? Was it, like you kind of said, a little bit of everything?
Yeah, it's a little bit of everything. Certainly there are... there's no doubt about it that the main character, Francis, is my brother. He even used to call himself, we had a band together, for a lot of years, before he passed away, and his, like, stage name and his pen name when he'd write things, he'd always introduce himself as, like, Francis Darling. And what's weird is that, like, in some way that plays into, like, Peter Pan, the Darling Kids, and, like, never growing up. So he kind of saw himself as this weird, like... this persona he created for himself was this weird fairy tale character. But at the same time, like, you have the innocence of the Darling Kids and, like, this weird Disney influence, and then, like hardcore heroin addiction, which, it, like, is a very strange fucking mashup. So when I found his journals and started reading through them, it was more just, like, a vibe and more me writing down things. Like, there's nothing directly taken... there might be a phrase here or there, you know, like, you know, to just, like, pay tribute to him. Like you mentioned, you know, Dave Mims, who's great. He's, like, we couldn't do this book without him. His, like, the way he does New York City street art and graffiti and all that, he, like, hides, like, messages and hints in all, like, so many of the panels. There's all kinds of crazy stuff going on. So... there's some of that. There's a lot of him sprinkled through there, of my brother's stuff. But really, it was just kind of like stuff I wrote down as I was processing. Like it wasn't like, hey, here's two journals. Like, he has boxes of things that, like, full of books and things he wrote and things he kept. He, like, was trying to get into poetry or short story writing. So there's a lot of weird, the mashup of stuff in there, but no character in here is really taken from that stuff. It's just more kind of like how I started to take notes as I was going through it and working through it. I just thought it would be healthy, and then I don't know, I it's weird, this thing just kind of, like, it manifested in this way. I don't know, it was a weird expression of grief. I was like, I'm gonna try to do, like, a project to do something with all this, and I was like, maybe I'll put this all together. And maybe I'll make it, like, some kind of art project, and I'll take his journals and I'll do something. Maybe I'll cut him up. I have no idea. But it kind of worked in at a really weird time where I was talking with Todd about all these weird ideas we had for characters and for a comic. And he had worked before on The Secret Adventures of Houdini. And so he's already kind of been through comics before, and I hadn't, and I was like, maybe it would be fun to just try and do this. And what's crazy is we did almost the entire first 100 pages, which we ended up breaking up into the first four books, we did over email. I have not to this day had more than one phone call with Dave Mims. He is a great worker and a lovely individual, but I have never seen the man in my life. He's great. He just keeps upping the bar, and I'm more and more impressed with what he can do every time he draws something. He's great. But it's totally a really strange way that it came about. I can't even properly explain. I mean, I just rambled for like 5 minutes trying to explain, but I really can't. I don't know. There's not much. There wasn't really anything other than who he was, because I wanted to keep him here. I kind of built a world that he could play in. This character Francis. That's why it's Francis Darling is the main character in Darling, and we call it Darling. One thing I can promise about my brother is that he was always trying to get it right. He wished he could be straight, and he was straight for a really long time, just drug free rather. He wanted to, you know, just be drug free for a really long time, and he finally had a great stretch, and then out of nowhere, he went back, and that's all it took was just like one slip up. And so this book kind of imagines if he had a big opportunity to get it right. This series kind of imagines that, like, what if like a down and out addict, someone just struggling with hardcore addiction, had like this one last shot to get it right. So Darling kind of tells the story of an 8-year-old girl that goes missing, and Francis kind of like falls into the, you know, almost stumbles into this whole plot of who this girl really is. And it's kind of tied into this like weird turf drug war thing that's going on. And he realizes, he's like, you know what? I can probably fix everything in my life if I've become a hero. And that was always my brother's thinking. He was always throwing Hail Marys. You know, he would never just do like quick outs. He would never just be like, oh, you know what? Today I'll wake up and I'll just apply for some job. It was never that. He was like, I'm going to apply to Princeton, and I'm going to get my master's in poetry. Or it was always something crazy. And I'm like, that's a crazy thing for you to do right now. I'm like, maybe you just wake up and try to, you know, stay straight, don't do drugs, and stay on the straight and narrow for a while. And he was just always big ideas.
And I think, again, kind of what you do, you and Todd do amazingly in this first issue is kind of, I think a difficult thing to do is in at least early on, endear yourself to Francis. And yeah. We've talked about this on the show before, I think, Tim, but I worked as a drug counselor for a long time in a recovery residence. And my dad, maybe for the past 10 years up until his death earlier this year, he battled with drug abuse, used meth, and drank a lot. And it was kind of a late on thing, like, you know, successful job. He was making like six figures or whatever. And then it just kind of out of nowhere sprung upon him. And like, that was the last 10 years of his life. And I think working there and obviously knowing my dad and kind of, to me, he's like an endearing and, you know, lovable character because, you know, he's my dad and I love him. Yeah. There are those aspects that you see early on with Francis in this where, you know, he takes advantage of Trixie in that setting. And to him, like you said, it's kind of this big idea. How do you approach a character like Francis to at least kind of do that? Like, kind of, you know, show the flaws and the insecurities and kind of the failures that are going to come up, but also, like, create this character that, you know, is likable, because again, it starts the issue off, you know, stealing from someone he, you know, obviously is close with and trust, and they trust him, and like that is like your introduction to a character that you're supposed to, you know, root for. And I feel like you guys do a good job of that. Is that difficult, and like, what was your guys' approach to creating a character like that?
Yeah, that's a good question, and it was something that we realized, and thank you for kind of picking up on that and also sharing your own personal experience kind of with having someone in your life who can be, you know, tough to love and to and to deal with. But that's kind of where it was, that's kind of what it was born out of, was it's really just my brother. I mean, he was struggling for so long, and he was born with so much charisma. I remember, like, someone used to say about him, like, he could sell water to a whale, you know, that expression. It's like, he had so much charisma. He was an all-star athlete in college. Like, he played for the University of Michigan. He played down in Miami. He played baseball. And he had such, like, a fall from grace. He went from being, like, top of the tops, like, I don't know, maybe just, like, a couple years from signing, like, a major league contract to like, I don't know, he just fell into, like, you know, the wrong scenes and party drugs down in Miami, and it just got worse and worse, and he could never really bounce back, and he could never get over the fact that he wasn't kind of like that, like, superhero image of himself anymore. But he never really lost his charisma. So coming up with Francis had to be likable. And I remember that Todd and I had written 12 pages for this that we thought, like, for the intro of this, and we're like, these are great, and introduced, like, New York City in the 80s, and it had pictures of, like, you know, cops cleaning up the streets and, like, crazy subway trains that were graffitied, and it was more like the opening to, like, something like The Warriors, and we're like, this is way off the path, and we threw them out. As much as we love them, I'm sure they'll pop up somewhere, or maybe we'll throw them in some kind of bonus thing, like a trade, or you know, something down the line. But it was totally, like, we wrote it, and it showed, like, the girl being kid, and we're like, this is not what the story is about at all. We're like, it's really about Francis, and we have to make people love him, even though he's like an Aladdin character, right? He's like stealing and jumping all over everyone's shit, but you're like, you know what? Like, I kind of like him, and his monkey sidekick's kind of funny, and, you know, he's throwing apples everywhere and blah blah blah, and, like, you know, so you like Aladdin, even though, like, he's like a thief, and you're like, he's got charisma. So that's kind of you know, where we started. We're like, well, people need to like Francis, you know, people need to like him. And we even, like, in a funny kind of nod, like, we start with a narrator, because, like, Aladdin starts with a narrator. You know, it starts with, it's Robin Williams doing the guy who sells the wares, you know, and so we're like, this feels more on point. Like, this feels like it should, it's about him. It's more about characters. Like, we got away from ourselves, and we thought it was about this, like, dark New York City setting. And we're like, but that's really, like, a bummer. And we got 12 pages in, and I remember just telling Dave, I'm like, hey, those are great pages, man, but, like, we're throwing them away. And he was like, well, that's cool. So what do you want to do now? And we rewrote the entire opening of the book, and we were like, this feels much better. Like, you want to like him. You know... He's just a class A major league fuck up, but you love him, and you're rooting for him, and you can tell that he's kind from the interaction with his neighbor. You can tell, but you could tell that, like, he's hooked bad, and he will, you know, beg, steal, and borrow to get money for drugs, and it's the only way he knows how to cope at this point. But it was important, funny enough, like, Todd and I talked a lot about Disney while writing the opening to this really weird, dark, violent fairy tale drug story. We talked a lot about Disney and kind of the beats of making you love a character early on who you want to root for, even though they might not be making the choices that you'd make.
I mean, that's a interesting, but, like, a clear parallel, because I think that's a lot of times rewatching Disney, and I even listened to, like, a podcast, like, reviewing Disney. Like, that is, like, the key thing is, like, early on, gets you involved in the character. Because, like, you know, kids' movies are, you know, 80 minutes, if that. And right. So they have to do a lot of groundwork to get to that. And it's interesting. Was that the opening character, was he always in it? Or is, like you said, he added it? Because I like him because, obviously, kind of he sets it up. But, like, he builds in that kind of surreal mysticism feel, like, it's uneasy when you see him, and then it goes right to kind of a grounded conversation right. with Francis. So I think it's a nice, like, juxtaposition to even build it towards the end, where, like, as as there's these real moments happening with Francis, like, you can feel like there's a slip to something else, or like this different world happening, which is really kind of interesting, like, juxtaposition with the two.
Yeah, totally. And that's kind of done on purpose. We knew we needed to, like, let people know that this was going to be fantasy and kind of weird right away. So there's a lot of stuff in there. There's a little misdirection on purpose. There's some very, you know, honesty. There's a lot of honesty in the beginning. Obviously, I wrote that little forward to kind of let people know where it's coming from. It's meant to keep you off balance, and so that when something, the next, it gets very strange, and but we never wanted it to get to the point where people are like we pulled the rug out from under them, or gave them something different, you know, like, or sold them something different than they thought they were getting. So we're hoping that that readers, and I think it is because of the new way we wrote the beginning and the first book, it's paced a little slower to set up something so that you don't feel like we you know, did a bait and switch. You know, there's like, we needed all those elements in there, from the narrator to Francis talking about like how he's never going to get out, but his friend Ness is like, nah, we can go, we can get out of here, you can do anything you want, and it's like, nah, I'm like stuck here and everything sucks. We needed to set all that stuff up, so that kind of playing with the tone a little bit is definitely it's on purpose, and it also makes it weird and hard to describe. It's like a fairy tale, mystery, violent crime. You know, it's weird. It gets more like, I mean, you'll see as it goes on. Like it's strange, but I can't imagine writing it any other way. I can't imagine it having fallen out of our heads any other way.
You've mentioned, you've alluded to this guy who writes it with you, and he's not, he must not do a lot of work tonight here to talk about it. But you guys do, I would imagine you guys do a lot of talking. You do a weekly podcast together. What is, and I've read in like another interview that like kind of the two things you bring to the table, like Todd kind of like a theme guy and kind of the bigger picture and stuff, like, what is that like writing process been like for you two? Is that something that, again, kind of the closeness of the general friendship you guys have with that, is that allow kind of a more back and forth with ideas? Is there like a clear line, like who's writing, who's doing stuff like that? Has it been a fairly kind of easy process, were you working in with something that Todd kind of already has done previously with comics?
Yeah, I mean, I think where we kind of fall, and it's complementary, which is really works out, because like I have trouble, I can't get started, really. I can't, and Todd can write something like on one of our podcast episodes where we talk, and he'll love that I'm bringing this up. We did a podcast episode like that was like a hypothetical, like what if Alf had met Mr. Belvedere, and and so he wanted to write an actual episode of Mr. Belvedere as if Alf had shown up and it was a crossover that never happened, but we always wanted when we were kids. So he wrote the whole script for it in like, I don't know, a couple hours. And this is like it was like a mini, like 10 to 15 minute, like it was meant to be a sitcom. And we put like a laugh track behind it and we released it on the show where we were talking about Alf and Mr. Belvedere. Todd is excellent at just being like, I have to get this out. And then he'll just be like, make it good. he'll tell me, he'll be like, because I think my strength is editing, really. Even though I talk and blab forever, so I'm not really good at editing like how I talk or on a podcast, but I'm good at I think just kind of editing his ideas, packaging them up and getting to the heart of what he really wanted to say or do in a little bit quicker time than usually he can do it. And he's just much better at making sure we stay on theme, making sure that, you know, things track throughout the story. and coming up with just some brilliant character beats and the emotional, actually the rewriting of the beginning, the weird narrator stuff, mostly came from me. Cause I don't know. I thought that was hilarious to just kind of set that up. I was like, I want like that Aladdin thing. But like the first interaction between Francis and Ness and the whole heart of that, like first opening conversation was all Todd. He knew that there had to be that strong character kickoff. And so I guess we just kind of compliment each other in that way. I guess, you know, like I have some weaknesses and he has strengths where my weaknesses are, and vice versa. So, but that's usually the way we work. And yeah, we talk because we do a podcast and we're doing the comic. I don't think there hasn't been a day in 5 years where we haven't texted back and forth at least. So like almost every day we're talking and trying to crank out ideas and trying to improve on stuff and make it better. Yeah.
And that, oh jeez. And that's with kids, you guys.
Oh yeah.
I can't.
Yeah, he's got two. I've got three. Yeah.
Last thing I'll do is function and talk to people. And you mentioned, like, kind of focusing on the characters of the book, one you've mentioned a bunch and is, you know, obviously kind of really central to this is New York City and kind of the setting of the kind of 80s or like kind of that feel of New York City. I think most people by now, I don't know, maybe it's because they live in New York and that, but like, obviously that time in New York City was completely different than like what we generally or people think of New York City now. Was there any research that went into that, or was there any like, I don't know, thought process that went into kind of capturing that feel of it? Cause obviously that plays into, you know, the setting of centering it kind of around someone using, because, you know, New York City at that time was, you know, a big hub for that, you know, before awful general policing policies that they put in place.
Right, exactly.
But, I mean, was that something, like, kind of built in, and was there a lot of, like, thought research that went into kind of getting that feel?
Yeah, I bought, like, a ton of books. I can't remember the name of one, but it was a really good one that was written by a cop who actually helped clean up the street. Like, it was all about how he cleaned up and like what it was like to be on the force during the 70s and 80s. God, I wish I remember the title, but I started to read it just to get a feel of like what they had to deal with, like some of the tactics they used. So yeah, a lot of research there. Definitely looking at old, I bought a bunch of pictures, portfolios of people who took pictures from the era to make sure we got like the street art and graffiti feel right. And obviously I feel like Dave was perfect for that and knocked it out of the park. I could always show him something from a book or be like, hang on, I'm going to send you a photo. Like, this is kind of what I'm talking about. A lot of research went in because I wanted it to feel like even our first cover, It needed it, like, I don't know, it's, you can't fake that, right? We couldn't have a clean New York City because that would be, it's that's just not what the story's about. It wouldn't work right. In addition to that, like, to celebrate our love of, like, my brother and I shared, I told you we were in a band together, but we shared a love of, you know, 80s kind of like new wave punk, you know, like the CBGBs kind of like vibe, and a lot of that is written into this. You know, the first main, you know, I call them, Todd and I call them bosses, but like villains that Francis comes up against, actually in the new set of books, which we're working on now and is only teased in the first set, he runs a punk rock club that's meant to be very much like CBGB's. So it gets, it's pretty important that we kind of understood what that look and felt, the look and feel of that was like. And there was definitely research. I'm sure I probably bought like 5 or 6, 7 books off of Amazon and just kind of ripped through them in a couple weeks to make sure that it felt organic, and shared a lot of this stuff with Dave and Todd.
Yeah, I was thinking, I can't remember, is Basket Case. There's one movie where they shot, I mean, there's a few, but there's some really great movies, like they shot Gorilla in like 70s, 80s New York City. I think Basket Case is one. I can't remember.
It might be. I know that I, and here's another like weird offshoot connection of something from another life. So before I mentioned the Warriors before, obviously like a big part of that is like spray painting, tagging, and kind of like gangs running different sections of the city and stuff. So there's a little bit of that in here. But what's funny is I also used to work as a game tester at Rockstar Games. So one of the games I tested and helped make was the Warriors game that came out. So I've always had a fondness of that one, that movie, but two, just that era in New York City of how like it almost felt like you were in constant danger. I mean, you know, I wasn't born until a couple of years after that, and then never really got into city life until later. So I never got to experience that. I think Giuliani had long cleaned up the streets in Times Square before I started heading in there solo. Yeah. That's definitely, you know, all that stuff is important. Every bit of street art and graffiti, that vibe, that dirt, you know, I don't know exactly I'm doing something with my hands right now. I'm trying to talk with my hands and I can't make it happen. It's the grit. It's the dirt. It's the crap on your shoe that had to feel, you know, it had to feel like it was in the right time and place. So I think we got it, but I'm sure people will, you know, they'll let us know. People are pretty vocal about things they do and don't like on the internet, so I hear, you know.
Not in comics, not at all. I don't know what that would be about. That Warriors game, that's one of the most underrated Rockstar games out there. That game's fucking rules. You've mentioned it, and to capture that feel, and we've talked about it a bunch, but you know, Dave obviously fucking kills it on this, like, yeah. Ridiculous. And even the like, familiar with Dave's work and other things, and this specifically, kind of the way he approached it and how it fits in with everything, and like you mentioned, he's doing his own style of, you know, visual storytelling and the way he's, you know, framing things and working things in. Mm-hmm. As writers, is that something you guys are giving him a lot of leeway when it comes to the way he's setting that up? I think of one specifically, like, it's where they're climbing, or he's climbing the fire escape, and there's the skull with the eyeball, and
the
he's
the framing skull with shots. The eyeball. Yeah.
Like, that's such a good framing shot in a way to kind of draw you into panel to panel. Is that something, again, kind of like your scripting wise? Are you guys giving like a general feel and stuff you want, and then he's kind of just running with it?
Yeah, so I think it's kind of, it goes both ways. So sometimes we see something very specifically, and first let me start by saying anything we've ever told him, he's always made better, which is great. I mean, that's what you want with any working partner. You know, he'll always see it. Like, sometimes I'll literally write, like, you know, like, Francis does this, just do your thing. Just make it look cool, or what, you know, like, and he'll know, like, what I mean. I'll be like, hey, I'm seeing it like this. Here's a reference picture. If you don't know what I'm saying, but, like, I know you got it. Don't worry about it. You're going to kill it. And he always does. Like, I don't know. I could probably count on one hand the amount of times we asked for edits, and they were probably only very early on in our working relationship. He's very, but sometimes we want things done and revealed a certain way, and, we will write that out very specifically and tell him, like, hey, so just, like, page one, we'll have this many panels. We'll get a little bit farther away a little bit. And then on the next page, we reveal this, you know, and he'll nail all that. We won't really have to give him too much direction. But sometimes, just because for storytelling beats, we might not want the audience to know, or the reader to know something yet until maybe the following page. So we will just let him know, like, hey, don't draw this stuff maybe on this page yet if you're thinking about a panel here. You know, but we script it out pretty much by page, especially this time. I think we have a much better working. We're working on the next set of books now, the working relationship is, it's really streamlined. I mean, it took us, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, like, on and off to do the first, like, 100 pages, and now, like, we're, like, knocking out books in, like, a couple months. It's no big deal, back and forth over email, so that's cool. But, yeah, it's a little of both. And he trusts us as well, you know, and I like how Dave is so good that I like to give him challenges and put him in weird positions and see what he does. So, like, for example, we have in one we're working on now, like, we have this weird scene where I needed him to understand, the closing credits sequence of the old Roy Rogers show. So I sent him a clip, and I'm like, hey, just so you know, like, this is what I'm talking about. I know it's really weird. And I'm like, and I kind of want you to put real scenes on the screen and real credits. Like, it's, and he was like, okay. And he did, it looks fantastic. And, you know, we did something similar also with, like, Johnny Carson show, like, later in the book. And I'm like, hey, if you don't know what I'm talking about exactly, like, here's the thing. And, I don't know, I just love giving him strange assignments, because I know he's going to make it look awesome. And, like, then I get excited. It's like Todd and I call it Christmas morning. Like, anytime we see new pages in from Dave, we're like, oh, it's Christmas morning. And we get so excited. We open them up and we're like, oh, man, that's amazing. That's so cool how he did that. And the way Dave draws is he uses, like, there's just a lot of, like, stuff to look at. It's very, like, and like I said, he hides a lot of stuff. In panels, one day I'll tell you guys, like, all the stuff that I've, like, hidden around or, like, teased, and you guys might not notice, like, flyers or things around, and it's crazy. He's great.
Yeah, and I'm sure, I mean, as an artist, I would imagine he enjoys that direction versus just, like, draw a fight scene on this page.
Right.
And again, like, I love his styles, like, especially in this, the way he suggested, like, again, it, like, in the broadest of terms, it's not even, like, too, like, it is busy with the sense of, like, visually story, like, visually driving it, like, is insane, the what he pulls off in this. For you, you've mentioned kind of where you guys are at storytelling wise and what's where you guys are going. Is there any kind of plans is coming out through Source Press? Like, do you guys have a plan for, like, at least, like, an arc or where you want to go story-wise and down the road? Or is it kind of, I don't know, do you guys have, like, what do you want to tease, I guess, kind of where you would like to see it go?
Yeah, it definitely has an ending. We started with an ending, kind of. So we know where it lands. I think it's probably going to be between 16 and 20 issues, but we do have, and we'll see if it resonates with readers and we get the opportunity to do more, we would love to, but we did kind of, like, what I call with Todd, like, we kind of Game of Thrones the shit. Like, we just kind of, like, I was like, no. Like, this, we could have, like, so many things going on and different areas and, like, you'll see in issue 2, like, how quickly the world opens up, and I want a there's so many stories that, like, we allude to, like, how did this person get in power, and, like, we allude to, like, how this person may have gotten into power, but we don't tell that story, and I want to tell that whole story, because there's also going to be people, like, coming back, like, everybody's gunning for the top spot is kind of what ends up happening, you know, without giving too much away of the later books. And Francis is just kind of, like, constantly, like, hot on the trail of where this girl last was. And he's kind of, like, just one step behind. It's definitely, it's a world we have plans for. For sure. That's the answer to the question. We definitely do. If people, you know, like Darling and the book resonates, we have some sick side stories and some other stuff and, like, you know, like origin stories and things we would love to do. However we could get those done, that would be amazing.
I mean, I would be very disappointed if there's not a one shot about how that mouse got that jacket.
Yeah.
I just want to know how you got that little cute jacket.
Yep. That'll be a whole thing. just, you know, where he goes and gets his clothes and how there's he got a little tattoo.
Mouse Taylor.
Yeah, totally. I mean, there's Desi. He deserves his own. He'll get his own thing. You know, everybody will get his own thing. He'll get his own thing. He's got a, you know, he's got a little tattoo on his ear, and he's got a little key tied to his tail. So there's all kinds of weird stuff going on with that mouse. So yes. We're going to have to come around and answer it eventually. Otherwise, we'll just be like, you know, I don't know if you guys watch Lost, but we'll just be like, smoke monster, polar bear, whatever. Yeah. You know? So we'll just have to figure that out.
For you, I mean, we've mentioned it as well. Super Nintendo's, you do a Todd.
Yep.
In preparation, I've talked about like I will search down any interview, anything people have done, because I was like, I don't want to ask the same fucking question that people get asked over and over again. So like I'll try do as much research as I can prior. Fell down the rabbit hole of this podcast. Fucking great. Obviously, someone with kids, like, because there's tons of like mom podcasts. Mm-hmm. I have a cousin. She runs. I don't think this is out of turn. She runs a business where she gives mom advice, and she makes fucking bank. It's insane. Like, people pay money. I don't know. Like, she literally makes like lots of money being a mom, which is crazy.
Right.
I mean, again, well deserved. She's a mom. But anyway, a great podcast. All slide whistle for it.
Oh, you're a slide whistle fan.
Holy, yeah. Holy shit. That one intro is so good. Yeah, I'm all for that slide whistle.
Man. Todd is going to be pissed that he missed that, because that's all him. He loves that. I mean, he's going to listen and he's going to hear that. But I'm sure, if he were here, it would be like him accepting like an award. You know, like he'd give a whole speech on the slide whistle, because I've been busting his chops about it from day one. And now it's just our thing.
Yeah, as someone who was in plenty of bands in high school and only once successfully got a recorder on one of the tracks, it's like always I was like, you know what, this track could use, guys, is a recorder. Like, I feel like we don't have enough songs with recorders. And like, you're a percussion bass guy. I was like, yeah, but that's like falls into it. Like, so one successful track. So, but anyway, the show, I love that you kind of, again, kind of introduce your kids and bring them in kind of what they enjoy about things and games. And as someone who's inundated their kids with comics, kind of on that side, as you now make your way into comics and venture into that, is that something you've explored with your kids? I mean, obviously don't know, like, if this is something you would share with them age-wise, but, like, or is that something, like, especially kind of with their uncle being something they can, you know, experience with them? And also, like, is there general, like, philosophy for you for, like, what you've explored with them in the world of comics?
Yeah, they're in, so I have, there's only one who would be even close to age appropriate. My oldest son is 12, but then I have a 5-year-old, and then I have a 1-year-old girl. So none of them are really comic ready yet, except the older one. And he has, I don't think he's found his, I mean, he loves superheroes, and he loves, you know, like, I feel like every Halloween he was either the Flash or Batman or like something, but he's just never caught the like reading comics bug yet. I don't know. And he's been asking to read this book. You know, he's been asking to read Darling, and I'm like, I guess you could read it. There's a lot of stuff in there, especially as it goes on, that's pretty violent. And also there's like a depiction of, you know, in the second book, of Francis using, which is kind of tough to watch. And also Trixie talking about how it's affected her life in a very rough way. Yeah, I don't know. I it's kind of a world I've yet to share with. I guess I just put video games first because they, both my sons play video games. And so that's, you know, maybe one day there'll be like a Super Nintendo's comics edition. But for right now, it's really just a lot of gaming and movies from the 80s and 90s and trying and us trying to prove to them that, oh, this was the best stuff. But then usually we get to the end and we're like, you know what wasn't that good? Willow. Yeah. You know, like we hype it up and then we give them all these fun assignments. And then, you know, it's just as much for us, it's as it's fun for them. You know, we make sure that our kids are having fun with it. Otherwise, it's not really worth doing, you know.
That's like the we watched the Mighty Morphin's Power Ranger movie. I'm like, oh man, this movie's great, because we watched the show, and then I was like, watch this. And my dad took me the day it came out. It was awesome, and I watched it. And I was like, well, this is not good. And they were like, let's watch it again. And I was like, well, there's other stuff we can watch, guys. Like, Jesus Christ, we gotta watch this. I feel like movies and video games are the right path, because you can put those on and step away. I find my 7-year-old reads lots of comics, and it just leads to lots of questions that I'm like, I don't know. Oh, just play Fall Guys. Please leave me alone.
right. Exactly.
But I will let Tim ask his final question. If I think I got all my important non-good questions, so I'll let Tim end with his final good question.
Yeah, good question. All right, Michael, so gun to your head, if you were forced to write one episode of 2.5 Men, what would happen?
Todd Hunt, Boston Philharmonic Audition, Slide Whistle. Thank you. Wait, I think I confused audition tapes. Oh, Tim and Kyle. Hi, guys. Thanks so much for having us on the show to talk about Darling. Mike told me you had a quick question, which was, if we could write an episode of 2.5 Men, what would it be? And I immediately thought of two very ridiculous things, so I figure I'll share both of them with you. One of them has Jake asking Charlie and Alan to help him with a bake sale because his baseball team wants to travel that season and they need a little extra scratch. So the entire episode is them in a kitchen making pastries terribly and listening to the 80s station on Sirius, which all ends with Bananarama performing at their bake sale, which is obviously a smash success. I know that sounds absolutely ridiculous out loud. For some reason, I think it sounded better in my head. Well, the other one is Jake wants to be in the school play and asks Charlie and Alan to help him with auditions. And it just so happens that they're using classic films as audition pieces. So we see Charlie and Alan having to help him by practicing a scene from Hot Shots, the movie. And they essentially reenact all of the parts that they shared together in Hot Shots. I know, it's not amazing. But I'd watch those two episodes. And those would probably be the first two episodes I've watched in full of 2.5 Men. Thank you guys so much for having us on the show to talk about Darling, which again releases on June 30th from Sourcepoint Press. It is a very important project for us, as Mike has described. It's been 6 years in the making, and we've really thrown everything we have into it. So any chance we get to talk about it and promote it, we really take seriously and are very appreciative. Thanks again. Have a great day, everyone.
Yeah, just one more thing. Can I just throw something in real quick?
Yeah, of course.
I just want to, just tell people, if you're interested in Darling, one, it's in previews now, please call comic book shops and let people know. But the really cool thing is that we're donating a portion of proceeds for every issue sold to, programs that are helping people, that are helping addicts get off drugs. And the really and the doubly cool thing about it is that SourcePoint Press is going to match our donation. Todd and I are making donations, so SourcePoint is going to match, and we're trying to do a lot of good here with this book. And I would love to. I would love it if you're interested to just get your comic book shop on board. We'll get as many issues out there as we can. We're doing a call campaign and other things. We really want to get some money to the programs that need it. That was one of the things that, like, Todd and I decided, like, first, if we were going to do this, like, in memory of just kind of, like, you know, my brother, and to help and assist other people, that this is the kind of thing we would do. Because, really quick story. Do I have time for a really quick story?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you got
time. Okay. At my brother's wake, it's sorry if this is going to end on a downer. Oh, no. At my brother's wake, I remember being like, I obviously just destroyed, and like trying to make sense of it. Like, lots of people were walking around. I'm like, yeah, I guess there's, like, you know, Uncle so and so, friend so and so, whatever, that's his old buddy and whatever. But then, like, something really crazy happened, is that, like, a couple of buses showed up from all these different rehabs and, like recovery houses, all these places he had stayed, all these people that knew him from another life. And, like, he had this whole other thing, this whole other side of him I didn't know about, where he helped people. He taught a guy how to play guitar. He, like, listened to people and wrote songs with people, and, like, just this whole other life where, like, that charisma carried through. Like, even in these, like, tough places, he was the guy that people still loved, which was one of the major inspirations for doing this early on, for me wanting to make donations early on, is just because of how many lives he touched I didn't know about. They had to, like, open another room to fit all the people. It started out, like, kind of like an intimate setting, but then, like, so many people showed up. I got to meet so many great people who knew him and had stories about him, and I didn't know any of them, or I didn't know any of the people. I didn't know any of the stories. And so he touched a lot of people in a lot of, like, really deep, profound ways that I had no idea. And so we definitely want to give back with this book. And we're super pumped that SourcePoint is going to match our donations. So I just wanted to make sure to get that in, because we're really trying to do something good here.
Yeah, and it's a good point to bring up, specifically pre-ordering, especially currently with the way shops are doing things, with everything going on. It's more than important, if you want a book, to go in and pre-order it, so people know distribution is still kind of being figured out. So it's important. It's always important to go pre-order a book so your shop knows. But specifically, I think currently, like, definitely make sure you know. And when I saw that in the book, that's obviously fantastic. Programs are way underfunded, way underutilized. My dad was in a pros program for a long time, graduated and taught classes afterwards. And again, it was like, that's like, that is what they rely on. It's like, you know, previous people who went to the program who are still struggling to help other people. So, like, to have more funding in there is great. If you're in an area where they're fighting that, like where I live, upstate New York, if they're fighting Narcon all the time, write to people. You should know how to use Narcon. It's really easy. But if anyone wants to get in contact with you outside of that, or to talk about the book, or find out more about Nintendads, how can they do that?
They can go to darlingthecomic.com. For preview codes and just for information, and if you want to sign up for emails. On Twitter, I'm just at Flyzach, FLEIZACH. It's just my name. There's, like, I don't know, five of me on the planet, so it was really easy to get that Twitter handle. Super Nintendads also has a website. I think it's just supernintendads.com. You can get us at dads at supernintendads. .com if you want to send us an email. Darlingthecomic at gmail.com is also an email if you want to talk. We have so many. We're really easy to to find. Facebook, Darling the Comic. We've kind of made it pretty easy to find us, and we're monitoring all these emails and social accounts all the time. So even if you if you don't want to buy a comic, you have no interest in reading it or whatever, that's fine. And maybe you're just struggling and you just want to chat with someone or just feeling like you're have no one to talk to about, you know, struggling with some whatever you're struggling with. I'm obviously not a professional, but feel free to email, and of course we will answer. I mean, I dealt with this for a long time in my life, and my brother was sick for a really long time with addiction and with this disease. So please just don't feel like you're alone is what I'm getting at. Just, you know, I really want people, I want this book to remove the kind of the stigma of like people are very they don't like to talk about it. It's very secret. People talk about it amongst themselves, but like I've known so many people who have struggled with addiction and obviously lost, you know, one very close to me and my brother. Please just, just anyone, you're not alone. Just reach out to anybody. And, there's definitely someone out there that cares and loves about you. Cares about you and loves you. So don't think that you're alone.
Yeah, and I guess, well, I'll let quickly before, because I'll forget, and then I'll get, having lots of coverage on social media, to me and Tim, who are terrible at it. Tim, where are you?
Oh, I'm Twitter, Instagram, at Tim Madura.
Yeah, and we are, I think it's at pages_panels. That's right, Tim. And we have an email, which I occasionally check, ourpodcastsucks@gmail.com. I did link it to my regular one, so I do get the email. I did finally do that. But yeah, we're terrible at that. But the main thing that we're not terrible at is talking to awesome people, and specifically books we love. And again, I can't express how much I was excited to talk about this. Absolutely loved the first issue. Again, something similar, like a kind of near and dear to my heart, is this type of thing, working with that so long, and obviously having a fatherhood similar issue as my work. But books like this, to kind of destigmatize it, I always think of the Donny Cates book. Oh, shit, what was that book, Tim? Buzzkill?
Oh, Buzzkill?
Yeah. That book's amazing in kind of the way it showcases the history and family history of abuse. And likewise, I think kind of what you guys showcase in the reality of it, but also kind of the endearing quality of people and empathizing them and humanizing them, I think is this, and obviously amazing looking book. So again, if whatever you got to do, pre-order it, call your shops, get in touch, get this first issue. Like I said, I think it's, outside of all of that, I think just in general is amazing first issue. So again, make sure that's the party. But thank you so much for joining us. Not Flea Zach, but
Flyzak.
Yeah. Yes, but again, thank you so much for joining us, and again, congrats on, like I said, a fucking amazing book.
Oh, thank you, and thank you so much for having me. This has been great. If you guys ever, if you guys ever want to pop on Super Nintendo ads and do a little cross promo, or what do they call it? Synergy, whatever it is, we'd be happy to have you on for some Super Nintendo dad's action.
Yeah,
I have to have children first?
Oh yeah, don't fucking invite him. Yeah, don't. No, he doesn't get.
Yeah, I think you need to have the battle scars of having children and having.
You didn't get to reap the benefits with no benefits, it's him. But before, yeah, as a reward for not having kids, next episode we will get back to George Lopez, but as a not reward, you do not get to talk about that. I'm like